Chapter 8. It's late now. God alone in his office, a single banker's lamp with a glass shade casting a pool of green light over his desk, the long shadows thrown by the stacks of boxes towering around him, the 20th century in full, terrible detail. A heavy heart. God knows that you are dealing with truly terrible decisions, with full-force main event stuff, when clichés hit you with all of their original oomph. Yes, his heart felt heavy. Forget lead. It felt like it was made of plutonium, with its atomic weight of 244, its density more than tenfold that of platinum. In fact, forget plutonium. His heart was made of francium, the heaviest of all the alkali metals, a mineral so dense that God had ensured there was never any more than 30 grams of it in the Earth's crust at any one time. And it wasn't just his heart that was heavy. Everything was heavy. His legs, arms, organs, they all felt like they were handcrafted from francium. He could barely lift the scotch to his mouth. God rests his francium chin on a francium palm, and his eyes, teary from the whiskey fumes, drift over to the 5-foot-high stack of files nearest to his desk. The top one marked Bosnia-Herzegovina conflict. He feels his blood give a sick lurch of rage, feels his thoughts turn crude and savage. Some clowns, some fucking retards, decided they believed some bunch of total shit, and here's what you got. Flush it down the toilet and start again. Easily done. Up the sun's temperature by just a handful of degrees. Nudge its orbit just a fraction closer. And it was all over down there in a few years. Throw another meteorite their way. Something just the size of Belgium. A fucking Manchester would probably do the trick. Boom. Say hello to my little friend. A virus. He had samples in the lab he'd been scared to even get out the petri dish. Stuff that made AIDS look like a head cold, made Ebola look about as infectious as an indie B-side. A few grams of that into the water supply, and mainland Europe would look like the third reel of a fucking zombie movie inside a month. And then... He turns and looks at the new shelves filling the wall behind him, groaning with books, records, CDs, and DVDs. Scanning from left to right, reading chronologically, he goes from Daniel Defoe to Irving Welsh, from a scratchy gramophone recording of the Blue Danube to the Chemical Brothers, from Battleship Potemkin to a box set of The Wire. From one to the other in each medium, in such a very short space of time. Where did it all start to go tits? Moses, you'd probably have to say. That faker. One of the first to fall to ego. When he'd got up there on Sinai and clapped eyes on that one pristine, immaculately chiseled tablet, the words "Be nice" engraved in God's beautiful, ever so slightly slanting copper plate. He'd freaked out. All that build-up, and he was gonna, what, come back down and say, "Hey, be nice, folks, and well, that's all. Have a nice life." The fuck he was. Son of a bitch got busy with the chisels and slate. Spent 40 days knocking out all that mad crap. The whole, "Thou shalt not covet thine uncle's graven ass on a Thursday" bullshit. All pure Moses. Jeez, did he get an ass-kicking when he got up here. God started the ass-kicking when the fucker walked in the door and stopped sometime during the Dark Ages, a good few hundred years. His cheeks looked like a pair of boiled beetroots. And what followed from all that crap? Interpretation. The whole, "I think what God meant to say" industry. Bam. A millennium later, some burly motherfucker is cutting babies' throats and tossing them over his shoulder because he reckons God is on his side. What the fuck was there to interpret about be nice? As God had repeatedly screamed during Moses' century-long ass-kicking. Anyway, we're past all that now, God thinks, sighing as he realizes where his thoughts are taking him. Someone had to reteach the meaning of be nice. He loosens his tie further and pours more scotch into his glass. He lifts the smoldering Cuban from the ashtray and leans back in his chair, hand-tooled leather brogues up on the desk. He uses the remote to turn up the music, a compilation CD his son made for him. Burned, the kid called it. God listened to Townes Van Sant singing Tecumseh Valley, enthralled at the way the little circular acoustic patterns chase the singer's voice around, at the way the two sounds, raw voice and woody instrument, overlap, merge, separate, rise and fall. God is enchanted. A creator, first and foremost, he is never more pleased with his creations than when they perform the most godly of acts, that of calling something into being from nothingness. This song, a few chords and a handful of words, and yet how eternal the pleasure from something so simple. His eyes drift over to the screen of a laptop, glowing on the corner of the desk, a collection of quotations from so-called religious leaders, basically a compendium of bile, invective, hatred, and fear-mongering. This last act the most baffling and enraging. But they had sold it, sold this fucking lemon. Millions of humans believed that homosexuals would never see the face of God, or those who indulged in multiple sexual partners, drug addicts, gamblers, the unbaptized, blasphemers, non-believers. And where was the laughter with these guys? It was the sound you heard everywhere in heaven. People were always cracking up. Out in the big office, where it was forever Friday afternoon, the newest, funniest gag was always doing the rounds. It was one of the first things decent but humorless souls were issued with when they arrived here, a sense of humor. That great moment when the scales fell away from their eyes and the world exploded into technicolor. When those who had been used to frowning and saying, "I don't get it," finally got it. Priceless. He drifts back into the music. John Coltrane doing A Love Supreme now. The simplest of riffs, just three notes, really, but man. The stereo, the fine brogues, the aromatic cigar, the fragrant malt whiskey, the laptop. So much cool stuff here that wasn't around when he left. Yes, busy little creatures. A soft knocking. "Come," God says, and Peter's head appears around the door. "Burning the midnight oil, huh?" "Yeah. Come on in, Pete. Have a drink." Peter pours himself a stiff belt. They chink glasses, the noise seeming to chime with the music, and Peter flops down into a huge, soft leather beanbag at the boss's feet. God has his eyes closed, nodding along to the riff Coltrane is playing. Peter can read God's moods better than most, and he knows this is not the right moment for a what-are-we-going-to-do conversation. Peter drifts into the track himself, closing his eyes and nodding along, enjoying God, enjoying the music, as much as he's enjoying the music itself. It's been a while since they did one of these late night in God's office putting the world to rights over a bottle numbers. "It's good, isn't it?" God says. "Hmm," Peter says, a pause exactly the right length before he adds, "Worth saving." There is no question mark. He opens his eyes and looks at the boss. God gets slowly to his feet, holding his whiskey glass downwards by his fingertips, swirling the amber liquor around. He drains it, sets the empty glass down, and picks up a framed photograph of Jesus. It was taken at his 10th birthday party. Jesus is laughing hard at something happening off camera. His eyes are crinkled tightly, and there is such pleasure on his face. The face of the man, not yet properly visible, still hidden behind the chubby skin and two big teeth of the child. God tenderly runs a hand over the photograph, over his son's face. "Yes, it is," God says quietly. Peter sees that tears are not far from God's eyes now. "Oh, no," he says, realizing. "You're not gonna." "No other way," God says very softly. "But they're animals down there. They'll tear the kid apart. It was bad enough the last time. These days? I mean, they make the Romans look like fucking social workers." "You think I don't know all this?" God says. Peter shuts up. They both stare silently at the photo of Jesus for a long time. When God makes up his mind, that's that. Peter is already concerning himself with practicalities. "He's gonna need a new name," Peter says.
"What's wrong with Jesus?" God asks.
"No offense, boss," Peter says, topping up their glasses, "but everyone's gonna think he's a fucking busboy."
"Jesus is fine," God says.
God is old school.